I appreciate you all coming in. I don't know why any of you are here since it's so nice outside today. I have to commend you all.
Should we leave?
Yeah, remember, you can do anything you like. You're checked in. You're present. This is the day you want to be here, though, I think. Anyway, wait till Jason sees you. He hasn't seen you. He'll be looking in about 40 minutes to see you. We're taking attendance twice this hour to see who's here and leaving partial credit. I want to welcome you. I apologize only having three articles to give you this time. We've kind of dropped off just because we made our point. We're kind of getting to the product stage. But I thought wouldn't be appropriate to have a meeting without just a little comment about fewer employees get health coverage. That's standard fare. And I don't remember what paper this came from. This best menopause treatment, maybe none. Apologies to those people who had treatment and paid for it. Anyways, that's just interesting thought there. Remarkable breakthroughs. This is good news if you're a health insurer. You put this on your thing and you will agree to pay for the best treatment, which is...
Did Barch leave for that joke?
Oh, there he is, good. So we'll put that in there, a little best practices, maybe nothing. And then Medicare test paper performance, I'm not going to read that to see what's coming. And I think that someplace we should talk about what Medicare is going to do to us come January. I think that's going to be a most interesting thing, and I don't think it's going to be as smooth as you think. We'll see. Well, that all being said, I wanted to spend some time on the big item of the day here. We've taken, is this our 12th meeting now?
Our 11th.
We've had a number of meetings. Some say 11, some say 12. I don't know. Anyway, number. We've listened to a lot of people tell us ideas, and we were trying that we need to bring it down to actually some action steps. And maybe you'll be wishing I was king, or maybe you wouldn't, because this is some things I would do if I were the king. But there's a whole process here. But what I've done, and I don't even like all the ideas I put in here, but they're ideas that I felt I should bring forward, doing duty to the process that we've experienced here. What I did is I sifted through literally a foot of articles and papers and reports from every group of you who's given us anything. And I think you'll see in here a lot of themes repeated that you've heard for the last 5 years or however long this whole thing's been going on. I think what you'll see is a lot of disclosure, a lot of transparency, a lot of administrative savings, a commitment to quality. At the same time, trying to avoid harm to many of the good things we've heard about that are happening, some of the innovations that would pop if we didn't get in their way. I think you'll see a move to increasing prevention and an effort to reducing unnecessary testing. And the trouble is that healthcare is not it's a science, but it's not a precise science, and there's no two people alike. It's not like fixing cars. You know, a blown out tire, you would put a new tire on and send them on their way. But there's no two of you alike. If you would have a blown out knee, no two of you would react the same way, whether it be the knee right here. So it's not a precise science, and it's expensive work. And so at the end of our day, we're going to have an expensive, imprecise healthcare system that's going to be moving along to the future and getting better all the time. 100 years from now, we'll laugh at what the stuff we did now, thinking that was our best effort. If ever you look at some of your drawings you did some time ago, you'll think, I could do better than that, or you... Why, I sure was not so smart then. And that was the best you could do. And you were kind of proud of the little stick man you do for your parents or whatever. So, with that in mind, I'm going to launch into some ideas here. The format that you see in front of you is the Citizens Forum format. And that's been commented on by various people for lacking some meat on the bones, but they were pretty good bones. As I looked it over, and in terms of looking at everybody's, I mean, I've got more stuff than I ever wanted to have about cost containment. But looking at all the ideas, it was really quite a good organization. And some of the sentences that were there that they wrote in their preambles and their little paragraphs, I routine, you'll notice that they're underlined. I made a few changes and added some parts. And I don't intend to read this to you, but I do intend to go through the ideas point by point so you can see what I would be thinking about. And what I want you to all do, and I'm glad there's a good crowd today, and I'm glad most of the members are here, because I need you to feed back to me.
And if there's a consensus that we have some ideas that are just loony or just abhorrent, we're not going to do that. That's not reasonable, because if I try to push it forward, one of you will go to the governor or to Dean Johnson or to my mom or somebody and squish it. And so there's really no point. And there's some things you think, why didn't they have more than that, or why did they even list that? I'm trying to bring in some of the thoughts and some of the things, and it's going to be pretty centrist. I'm not sure what centrist is in healthcare, if it's a politics group, but there certainly is a lot of interest groups. And so maybe it's more of a big circle as opposed to left and right. And so you work in the middle. And this table, as it were, this table in the middle of the room will be our product. It won't be everything everybody wanted, but it'll be a step in the right direction. Some of the things we can't do today, we'll do tomorrow. And also you see the word study quite a bit in there. I'm not thinking in terms of the typical department does a study and issues a report. Nobody does. The reason I wrote a report is because I've been told time and again I can't make people do things that I want to make them do. I can't pierce ERISA and make these self-employed plans do stuff I would like them to do. But I can ask them to talk about it. And maybe the weight of the discussion, they'll say, you know, that's a pretty darn good idea. They tell me all the time that they were just waiting for good ideas to incorporate them, to do better work on behalf of their people. And anyway, so I'll editorialize more as I go along. But let's just kind of just jump into this thing. And if members have some question, jump in. We've got a little better than an hour to get through this, and it'll take all that time. But people in the audience, I would very much like your annotated report. You know, if you have another copy, take two and write them up, mark them up. I need to know what you think. And the better you do your homework in the next day, the better I can incorporate your thoughts. An unusual offer to an audience, but I'm sincere about it. And if people aren't here, tell them to get one of these things. And if they wait till next week, then they're not going to have the input they would have tomorrow. So I need some homework for Wednesday night. The first idea was put Minnesotans in the driver's seat. And I think you've noticed that I've emphasized patients and consumers. And because they're the people that are actually affected by this. Because quality has got to be key while we retain access and contain costs. And the whole point here is connecting people to the cost. And remembering that the cost is not just what they pay at the door or in their premium, but it's also the lost wage they would have had there been a lower cost. And that implies burden to the employer as well. And being competitive in a global economy, I didn't put all that stuff. If you think you need some more sentences about global economy, we'll stick it there. And also, you see in the third paragraph, it's really important we don't cause harm. And some of these ideas are just, like the first one, this isn't my best idea. They're randomly, and the different categories are random. They're not organized. If you are an organizing person, I'd be happy to. I had no time to organize them, but they're just listed in random order. But talking about purchasing other approved insurances, allowing for-profit HMOs and allowing our good friends in the state HMOs to convert to for-profit. I've been told that it might cost them $1 billion to be allowed to do that, which would go into some kind of a wonderful pot of money. That's very controversial, and probably at the end of the day we're not doing either of those, but I put them out there just for food for thought. There's a Senate still involved here, and they have opinions on these things, too. But still give me your thoughts. Conformity, that's old news. This mandate-free plan, this is the Wilkin bill where I added maternity from 1 to 14 as well, knowing it would not survive probably even the floor, not anywhere beyond that. That passing is not a guarantee, but at least I'm trying to promote the idea of it. And so I'm putting some pragmatism in here, even though I can't predict the future. Austin, any questions about the first section? If you have ideas, I hope this provokes some ideas that you've been thinking about that we could add into here as well. This is your chance. Not today, but as we... I need your annotated notes, too, and please sign in. Any questions on the first section? Quality disclosed cost and quality. I really try to build on this Minnesota Health Info site, where that would become even a more of a one-stop shop. And so the more it's used, the more it would become used, the more it would draw good material. People would actually rely on that more than they do now. The content would improve, the reliability. Not that it's unreliable or incredible now, but it's the more something becomes used, the more it becomes even more mature. This is a lot of this disclosure stuff here. I know some of these are controversial. But I think that if you read the language, in some of the one of the Durenberger sentences there, it says that you should know really who's getting what. Oh, as a member in just above two, as members of the community, they should know where the money goes, how it is used, who profits from it, and what quality outcomes we're getting for our money. And so it stands to reason, if you're getting some money, we should know that, especially if you're from a group called a nonprofit. If you're for profit, at least then we know you're for profit, and part of the altruism is reduced. If you're nonprofit, people think there's some altruism there. Anyway, so you'll see a lot of disclosure. And this is some more, this is HMO Insurance Company report cards, administrative costing, and just you'll see some pet issues from me. I understand that in some cases they include the provider management and the pre-authorization as a medical expense. Speaker on the floor. Yeah. And to me, that's not a medical expense. That's admin. It's not really going to the patient. It's helping to regulate the care. And so we can discuss that. And I'm not even trying to reduce anybody's admin any number. I just want to know what it is. And then employers can shop for who has the lowest admin. I don't even care if we blow up what it has to be under. Charge me 95% admin, but then tell me you're charging 95%, and I'll buy somebody who's 70% or 15 or 6. Anyway, and some of these, there was one point I understood. This came from somebody on B. This has that somebody was not allowed to go to freestanding surgical centers because the hospitals that owned it forbade it or something. And this next one is increasing information on healthcare plan options. The website now just lists the health federation just as a lump. I think if the state approves a plan, if they're alive and well in Minnesota, they should get their own little link and their own little blurb. And if you're shopping, you should be able to click onto 15 or 19 different sites and just have a full array of who's doing it. That was the idea there. Hospital pricing. I think that when you have TV shows, if they find disparate prices and pricing patterns, I think that's not what we intend. And I think it's embarrassing to the hospital. But charge what you want. Just tell people what you're charging. Tell us your pricing patterns. And this is if you're interested in cost. That's why some of these are a little gutsy. And we won't do them all. But certain hospitals have a standard pricing array that they would do. Maybe they have lower per CPT code, but they charge more CPT codes. And that's, so you may have apparently a lower cost on the one price, but as in terms of procedures, you charge more. And the market, I'm trying to create a market. That's the idea of that. So, love me or hate me. Pharmacy costs, that's just a tweak. That was that language that was from before and about the pharmacies disclosing at the point of sale. There was some question whether they had to give their own usual and customary or their plans. Usual and customary, yeah.
Jeremy, open for some questions as we go?
Yeah, sure, if it'll help clarify.
But maybe I'm not sure about clarifying, but one observation I'd make is that, and I'm a big fan of disclosure. Actually, I'd make two observations. One is, except for pharmacy, there's no provider disclosure in any of these clauses, and I think it'd be helpful to have some provider disclosure, except for hospitals and pharmacy. But I'm talking about individual clinics and so forth.
Because we did that last time, aren't they required to have a book?
Well, we have about a sentence or two that
we can beat that up.
Yeah, it could use a little embellishment.
No, I'm looking for all ideas, so there's no bias.
And the other thing to observe is that it's one thing to put information out there, but I'm a little suspicious that unless there is some sort of motivation on the part of the consumer, it's like getting you get a very thorough report of your explanation of benefits if you have a surgical procedure in the hospital. But how many of us take the time to go through? If it says zero balance on the bottom, that's sort of the end of story. Mm-hmm. So somewhere along with this is the need to sort of find a way that maybe it's part of that first, but that there's actually a tangible incentive on the part of consumers.
And I think part of that is that since employers are beginning to shop more, and they're trying to find out what their options, and they don't even know them, they just sign up for whatever plan they've got. I hope that as the HSAs kick in and there's more employer shopping, that they would be... I'm thinking of employers doing shopping in particular, less about patients.
Yeah. I was just thinking that I would need to be able to shop around for chiropractic services, and I'd want to make sure I knew their rates.
I mean, that was the case by them. Fair enough. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I like that, and I agree that clinics need to be in there for cost disclosures, too. And also, I think we do need to talk about asking hospitals, clinics, and so forth to give information about lower cost options to where they're available and when they're practical, because I think right now patients doesn't have a lot of information about what other options might be that might not cost as much, and a lot of times people are concerned about the cost, whether or not they have health insurance, or they're at least concerned about having their options laid out for them.
Yeah, would you write up a couple of bullet points?
Sure.
What I'm looking for from members, or if you have a thought, you know, bullet points would be exactly what I'm looking for. What I've tried to do is to get a bunch of ideas out here to get you all thinking, and then to be shot at, and then to see how well we all survive. Any more questions? Or okay. Where are we at down here? Okay. Okay. Well, the PBM thing, and this is probably controversial if you're a PBM, but again, there's, you know, I hate to wreck people's constitutional rights and competitive edges, but still, as you look at, you know, when any group accumulates a lot of money, and I'm not against accumulating a lot of money, but they got it from somewhere. And if you can squeeze both ends, the pharmacist and the drug company, good for you. But in an era when companies are almost going out of business from increases in their costs, and pharmacies are trying to stay open in rural areas, at least if people know where that's going, that would be interesting. And so that's the point of that. This hospital infection rate, the language that we'd be coming forward with this, I forget what group it was, they said, please don't do this now, but if you do it, do these couple of things. There'll be some language on some of these if they survive the initial cut. So these are more concepts today. Licensing board directories. Massachusetts has this, and we brought you a sample of that. I don't know why they wouldn't want to disclose this information. I don't know if malpractice convictions are public, but I kind of thought they were. But I think people should know who they're hiring. And if you want disclosure, if you want to contain costs, if you think malpractice is an issue, a lot of people do. I don't think they're putting caps on it, is the answer for me, but I think if you just then they can explain. Oh, it was whatever. And the hospitals, I talked to a couple hospitals about this. They didn't seem to mind this. If you clarify what uncompensated care means by offering some more categories that are uniformly used, like bad debt, usual and customary charge reductions, actual charity care, and what other ones come out as discrete categories.
What, Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Where does that go in terms of saving?
We understand. Let's just be. Yeah, it doesn't save us any money, but they. Well, we see where shifts are happening. It's just all
just
part
get
of
more information.
It's all part of hospital disclosure. They're, yeah, some of these aren't going to save money per se, but as a whole thing, they make things transparent, and we know what costs really are being incurred.
Good question. And this and that, this may be the one that people would just look forward to reading on weekends. All some evidence-based medicine sites, reading Cochrane analyses, and you know, maybe a vacation option. They could be a whole. They could go to Club Med and access this site. But this is in particular, I think, for the practitioners. And I was talking to a medical group. It occurred to me that they're the ones who help know this EBM stuff, and their patients presume that they know it and they're using it. And so the more you talk in each component, each subset of medical provider group, the more they're going to kind of move along and improve their own quality. That's the idea there. This is one, I noticed Gibson Wilkin is repealing this. Definitely going to like this one. This is where, especially those in the nonprofit business who tell us how nonprofits are scratches. And in a world where even if stock is doing well, we're still having a hard time grappling with companies that wind up getting their principal people $100 million or more. It's just kind of hard to grapple with that for me.
On that one, I think it would be sensible to say that anybody that accepts any public Medicaid, Medicare, Minnesota Care patients should be reporting that information, not only
make a note,
nonprofit.
You'd be lucky to get this one done.
I know we only have one for-profit hospital, I believe, in the state, but we do have one. And I think that some of the number of the for example, radiology clinics and other things are not, certainly not non-profit, and neither are a lot of the physician offices and clinics. So.
So make a bullet point out of it.
Thank you.
And this is a little controversial. I was talking to one of the clients. Health Utilities Commission or some better name. We could have a name that group contest. I'm looking for MCHA is required to go through a public process to tell us why they need the rates they need. And people come and give stories about how they can afford to pay that. And I think that the more we do this in public, the better it would be. We're reasonable. I don't even know what's reasonable in this thing, but I think if the commissioner is reviewing stuff, I don't know if that's all private data he has to receive. But the more you can shed the light of day on someone says they want to raise their prices, they'll be embarrassed to want to raise their prices. If as a provider I have to, you know, go to a meeting and say I want to raise my prices $2, at least someone has to hear me say that and I have to defend it. And I might get it, I might not get it. You know, I would probably just get it, but if I had to just, you know, make people real aware of that, it's the natural suppressor of costs. So, and plus the employers would see who's doing what increases and maybe there'd be a... If a company wasn't going to raise prices one year, they would make a big splash. We're not going to ask for an increase this year, and then they'd become
confident.
That's the idea. There's a few bugs. That's,
Chair?
Yeah.
Just a brief question on that one. I think if we're talking about health care rates from a health plan, I believe those are all reviewed by the department already. So,
but not in public.
Hmm?
Not in public.
Well, I don't know about that part.
No.
Nope.
No.
Making the process public.
Oh, that's
where it should
true.
Be. That's the point of it. And then they would go to this, I mean, the commissioner could meet with them in public. You could just have this little committee, which is this little committee here that would just listen and make a non-binding recommendation that he would then. It doesn't add any power, just adds the disclosure part.
If I could follow up too, are the documentation underlying the rate, I mean, the process is not public, but are those documents public at this point?
Oh, they are.
So we may be closer than we think. I don't know.
Yeah, or that could go on the website.
The point is that someone would have to actually go over and take the documents out and read them, I guess. And you're saying, okay, you're saying it would be better to have, it would be easier if it was just a public presentation of it.
There'd be a hearing and there'd be Eric Esler would show up.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
I'm interested in the transparency also, but my question is in regards to how you can actually accomplish reviewing all the rates and all the rate proposals. You know, with utilities, they don't change quite as much. I don't know that they fluctuate as much as with healthcare. How do you anticipate that, or have you thought about how you actually administratively do that piece?
You guys go once a year? Or
no.
Is it an annual then?
Yeah. They just report their rates after they've increased them. Already, so that's basically what they do, and then the department decides whether or not to ask for an explanation of why their rates went so high. Unfortunately, I think Representative Wilkin has a bill, and that'll make it even less of a process than that to get that information. But I would say, Representative Broad, that if the end result is that they don't raise their rates so quickly or so readily or so fast, that's probably a good thing for healthcare costs in general, but I would say it's an excellent thing to have some rate reviews publicly and have that information much more public than it is right now.
We can work on this. Go ahead.
I know we got to get moving, but would it be worth? It might be worthwhile.
Well, we're going to take some testimony on these ideas later, but I wanted to slide through the ideas, just so it can be exposed, and people are, I think people are going to find us. Some, you know,
I think there's interesting here, but
yeah,
it'd be helpful to understand.
Well, let's put a if we have time again, we can come back to that. One. That's
sure. Just one other comment. In an ideal world. I mean, the reason that utilities do that is because utilities are given monopolies. Technically, in health plans, we don't have monopolies. Now, we put three of them together, that gives 85% of the business, so we may be not too far from it. But if there were competition and you went out of line, then the other health plan would step in. So I'm not sure how to do this. I would hate to see us turn this whole healthcare thing into just a utility kind of notion.
Yeah,
obviously, I mean, competition too.
Probably a bad name. I just
well, what's the name?
We can call it the Health Review Commission.
Yeah.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Well, so
the contest is already underway, I guess. What do we should name it? We can call it the Bradley Commission. If they make it. Anyway, we'll come back to that. I don't want to be scurry too quickly, but there's that's only on page 3 of 10. Okay, let's talk about quality. And a lot of the articles I had to read in our advanced honors class, it said that if you undertreat, you cost more money than if you undertreating costs money. If I get it right. Especially in some mental health things, but even just in many of the physical issues. And a lot of the thought here is I'd like to focus on making it easier to do primary care for whatever providers are doing that, and really ratchet down on some of the testing, make sure it's necessary. You really have to go to the hospital if you really have to do the CAT scan. You really have to. I had one doc write me a letter, and he said back when people were paying, they would come in and they'd always take an X-ray. Well, do I need an X-ray? Well, why don't you give it I'll come back in a couple of days. It's still bugging me. Well, that's fine. And now they run to them right to a scan. And it was an interesting email, and I was looking for it to give it to you as part of my packet, and I couldn't find it again. But there was a time that certainly moved on. We no longer settle for what used to be fine, and people actually lived a long time with that fine care. And I think we're paying for it. I'm not sure the quality is improved with some of the testing that we do. And I think some of the skills that the good primary care providers have that are very talented are underused because they feel pressured to crank through people and they don't get to have the time doing the prevention and the interventions and the counseling that they would be better at if they had more time. And so if you paid them a bit more or at least didn't push them on the scheduling on the front end, you might need less tests. Maybe I think there's somewhere to go with that. That's what some of the docs tell me anyway. That's what the first one is about, trying to push people away from scans. And if you need them, I put non-emergency. If it's an emergency, go ahead and do this stuff. If you got a broken something, then check that out. Number B has to do with just a spin-off of that thing. We talked about that wound care, and that was just one case in point. But how do you find a way to approve things that are really valuable that are going to save money? Because a lot of times you have a machine that is owned by somebody who's got some clout and they don't want to have a new thing get approved because then their machine's out of business. Or and how do you disallow something that was once a good thing and you got a lot of machines still around town? Okay, that's the problem. And I don't know the answer. And a lot of these things just either were study or need to, and need to means they could probably require it. Study means that people should look into it and see how they can give us advice, how the system should make it happen. Without mandates, it's just a positive discussion. And, something else. I talked to Delta Dental. They were very instructive when I had this meeting. Was it Mike Kelly's? But number C, he tells me in Delta Dental's work that the middle half or so of the people, the providers, are like, they're doing perfect work. They're hitting all the standards. The lower, and we didn't work out for them to come talk to us. And the lower quarter or so undertreat habitually, which is bad. They cost more in the long run. And the top chunk are habitual overtreaters. And he said it's like a chip in their head, and they're incorrigible. They're stuck in this habit of their view or their training. Yet all the managed care is directed at the whole arena of providers. And so I picked out the top 20% of cost-incurring providers as being a population group that you want to manage the heck out of them. And leave the bottom 80% alone. And you'll discover more cost savings out of that top 20% because they need to be cost-managed. There was one article about someone, I think United, that just lacked. They kicked out 73% of one group. But that'd be the wrong way to go because you're kicking out the middle people who are the best ones, you're keeping your lowest providers who actually undertreat and maybe be inappropriate. But the top 20% are the ones you should consider putting on probation or managing them. And I say as a provider. And we can be trained. Some of us can be trained. Some of us are simply not going to comply. They should just be going cash. And then let them try to live on cash. And you'll be surprised. Some people will like them. They're affable or whatever. That's the idea. You'll hear some of those themes throughout. And the number D is a vague
decision. Sure.
Yeah.
On that one, is there something in that? Are we preventing them? Is there something preventing that from happening?
No, they can do it. It's something I'd like to give them license to it.
Okay.
Get a kick out of license to go bash providers if they're. Never mind the editorials.
We're still on.
Yeah, we're on C and D.
Okay. Just a comment on that one also. as if we do some of this kind of thing, and there is a kind of an intuitive logical sense to it, but one of the concerns is to make darn sure that we're looking at sort of overall cost from end to end, and not just the kind of the crazy CPT code cost
right.
that doesn't necessarily connect to.
And you can, there's actually, I'm in almost any managed group there, they know how I behave. And they do a case, they do a cost per case of cases, and
yeah.
And it's hard to risk adjust it. But there's a, if you ask the plans, they can tell you who their top 25 are.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's what I'm getting at. And I don't know what the number is, if it's top 5% or 10%, but it's a talking point. Number D has to do with, that's about, we often measure, if you give someone treatment, that's the same as getting a result. And actually, if you look at what the results are, how do you get better results, never mind what they did. That's, the input is the treatment, the output is the result. Does that make any sense? You really want to look at outcomes
as a measurement.
Per price, and then, like Griffin Bradley said, you know, longitudinal outcomes
and cost over time.
I remember in the past we've had hearings, and the plans couldn't tell me what their longitudinal cost was for people who did this or that.
Different kinds of treatments.
They just, and if you did a lot of, well, I'm a chiropractor, they're always, look how much chiropractic care you spend, and not knowing if it reduced the overall cost. Another group that couldn't come was a group that was going to tell us, when they added chiropractic into their plan, and they added it on, well managed it, the whole plan cost less. Which is interesting. And that doesn't mean all chiropractic is a great idea, but it's something to think about. And so as you do more front end loaded primary care provision, your overall case cost will decrease. You have to think so. Anyways, that's the idea there. And it's a real driver. It's a fundamental way we do our business. And the number E has to do with how do you use evidence-based medicine, alternative and complementary providers, and how to get those up to speed quicker. If indeed there's value to be found in
what people go out and pay cash for,
I didn't find the stat about how much they pay cash. People pay cash for alternative and complementary providers. But it's substantial,
and they're paying cash.
And they're not all hypnotized. They get some benefit that they discern to be a cash benefit that they would pay for. They don't tell their doctors
for all kinds of reasons.
And so if you can get those into the system, you might experience the savings that they would provide and actually relieve the people of out-of-pocket costs. And this, one of the staff talked about how about use crutches and walkers and stuff. And then also the related thing is there any issue in the cost-effectiveness in medical supplies relative to some of the, I know there's a big deal about the Medicare buying all these scooters that you can get, and they upgraded one whole generation, and it cost way more money than those articles. So, another cost factor. This together, our expert, I know it's clumsy, but it seems like we put those out to all the pharmacies that would let people get them. Only about 20,000 people, I think, have used those things, and they're being marketed only lightly. But there's a lot of our constituents who would benefit greatly by getting those food prescriptions. All right. And number H has to do with far more work on the people that incur the top 5 to 10% of the cost. You give them some kind of a case manager or some kind of, I don't know how you do it. That's like a study.
But if you can put your management work into the people that cost the system the top 5 to 10% in a respectful way, you might be surprised that they would get better results. They'd feel more cared for. And they would, and there's talk about that. But there's something we should come up with.
In the same way, a medical home, number I, where you allow this person who is just, they're going to cost anybody to get a lot of money. If they can keep their doctor where they're settled and doing good work and they're as cheap as they're going to get for their condition, once their plan changes, they'll be forced to move again to a different medical clinic or wherever their primary care is at. And all those startup costs will soon have. Or they don't know about, they don't have the institutional memory in that place. And that's a cost. We're going to do a bill about medication management for medical assistance. I can't imagine why we wouldn't do that for all the folks. As I see pharmacy, I see that kind of evolving into a place that involves less actually passing on medications to the blood on a mail order, and more need to use their professional skills in doing what they do the best, which is medication management and knowing about the interactions. A lot of MDs can't keep up with that.
they can be expected to, but the pharmacists make it their career. And I think a better marriage of those services would be really a benefit.
Key is that cancer drug. Remember, L, I hate to bring up, especially given the Terry Shouse. But I think if you're talking about cost, we do a lot of things to die, to do everything we could do, and it doesn't make any difference at all. It may actually make the person less happy.
That's true.
And at some point, there's a lot of money in that. And it's not respectful. And I'm not interested in any kind of euthanasia. But there's some things that just don't pay to do. And the family feels nervous and so on, and that's what we should look into. Or something.
Well, Mr. Chair, I had a good idea from a constituent of mine today who sent me a letter, article on California and how they had just spent over $1 million on six prisoners that two of which I believe were brain dead, but they kept them on machines for 6 months at any rate. They're looking into this now, their legislature. But so I called the Department of Corrections to find out what we do. Do we offer prisoners health care directives when they come in and make them have them fill it out or encourage them to fill it out? We don't do that. We don't do it unless they're in the hospital or they've already been injured or whatever. So I'm thinking that that might be a really, especially now we have a lot of aging prisoners. It's definitely a good idea in nursing homes. I hope nursing homes are doing that on their own. But I think that we perhaps might want to require the Department of Corrections to offer health care directives when patients...
That'd be a matter for the whole committee. But you can make
right. But that could be... Yeah. It could be a cost savings, but also it could be a practical, very practical
yeah.
issue.
Yeah. Keep making your notes. Oh, and then the number M, this is, I think, really important, that with all this EBM stuff, you still can't change the provider. Because EBM is wrong sometimes. It's flat out wrong. It's the best to know, it's standard, but it doesn't fit 10 of the people in this room. But it would fit 40 of the people, you know? And the provider has to be allowed, without penalty, to do what he or she thinks is best. And it's a kind of a balance, I think. And there's a standard, but then why would you deviate? Oh, because I had good cause to. Because this person would not have benefited by it. And I think that's really important to keep that throughout this whole thing.
Mr. Chair, on that one, that's assuming that all providers really know completely what they're doing. And I think we know, you just said before about the outliers.
Yeah.
I think the outliers are here too. So how do you prevent then somebody who wants to do something different, that maybe it's even more costly, but it's really not the right thing to do?
We're the smart people, Mr. Chair. That's a dilemma, but it's still, you don't want to limit innovation, because if there's an advance if EBM ever moves beyond where you locked it in, someone has to do something different, you know, to move it out of that point. So, good point.
Well, as a kind of anecdote to that, I just had a discussion this past weekend with a physician research involved, said that there's a growing cost driver of in-office scanning equipment, which oftentimes the provider actually has economic interests, and it gets used a lot. And he said in one case it didn't have economic interest, it's just because it was kind of a toy.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just, so why not use it? I'm not sure, but it seems like to just carte blanche to be able to say if you want to do something different, you have to have some kind of control. I don't know what.
Yeah. We have to balance it, and I think we're in agreement. Just don't know how to do it.
Okay, now we're down to N.
Oh, and I'm not, just, I mean, it's funny that I gave you an article today about,
you know, the best treatment for whatever this condition was. Was nothing.
And there's so many books about side effects and all that. It just seems like the whole point is to use drugs properly, and maybe the best part of number N is the
latter half of there, where you get feedback and the continuing training on what's been misused and what pharmacists and doctors are seeing as side effects.
But we pay a lot for side effects.
And if we're worried about costs, we need to find a way to use drugs. Exactly, like that, too little, not too much.
And then number O is kind of a takeoff on a previous idea where you give the primary care provider more time to spend. That should be on extended disease management. And one thing that's lacking in the system is cross-disciplinary cooperation and coordination.
There's biases within the medical world and within and without it, and not to the benefit of the patient. And I think we have to move beyond that to what really is best for the person and allow better coordination. I know in the we've been trying in the work comp thing to try to do some cross multi-provider training at work on some of the conservative amenable back injuries, and that's hard to do. But there needs to be more of that. That's the future, is in understanding your niches and not doing what your niche is not. Number P, if there would be some way, as we, one of the ideas we'll come up with is some more e-records and e-technology. This is the e-technology idea about allowing providers to actually log on and say what they have to do for this person here. And number Q is a little controversial power to the boards, that somebody has to be overseeing this thing. And the associations are not bad places, but they're traded organizations. And the universities are kind of research organizations and not practically minded enough. And so I defaulted back to the boards, asking them to work on this. And if they, at least they could just provide some scrutinized, reliable information. Hopefully they haven't got too much of an axe to grind. That was my best idea on number Q for now. Number R is my big foray to the malpractice world. It seems like what would really pass, if anything, would be equalization of the malpractice on ambulance providers. And then that Emmer language on number S, which was that study language where you talk about how we're being affected by that. Number T is more disclosure. No, this is a licensing board review. This could be done privately, but if you have three malpractice issues, or should have a little talk with you, it seems to me. I don't want you to be embarrassed. We're not making them kick you out. But there, it's time to have a chat. And I hate it when I get a letter from my board even telling me my kids. And so maybe they need to be remediated. Maybe they need to be involved in that alcohol treatment program or something. But this would be just a helpful way, and I'm happy to hear from the different professions and the boards about that. Number U came out of that health, out of the mental health work group using behavioral pharmacy management in the health, in the mental health world, and trying to deal with using the employers to help manage depression. This would all be a patient permission, of course. And the next one is the same thing out of that same work group, trying to provide step down crisis services for mental health. They're cheaper, and they kind of use. It leaves the other beds available for more severe cases that came out of that book. If I hope I wrote it down right. And a lot of this stuff on these high cost patients, if you can work with them, they feel like somebody actually cares about them. And if they are indeed dependent upon treatment for part of their personal needs, which is called a dependence, that they're wrongly dependent on care. Having a staff person or some nurse practitioner or a PA or somebody who would oversee their, would work with them on their case, how you get along, would actually minimize their visits, and they would be able to work with the docs better and make sure that the clinicians knew with the status of this patient. I think that's an idea coming up about that too later. And number W is my answer to how to deal with the no-fault issue. There is language I'm working on with that with some of the insurance companies to allow commerce and licensing boards to collaborate in cases of fraud, of overt fraud, and also to deal with, have the licensing boards deal with the cases of excessive care, and then give them more sanction authorities to deal with those. I think that way you actually address the issue. Because the issue isn't 80%, the issue is those 20%. In the case of fraud, it's the 1%. In the case of excessive care, that's probably the 5 or 10% top ones you wanted to mess with. So, and the boards understand that, and they have teeth. And it wouldn't cost very much. And then all the issues about billing and so on go away. The number X has to do with loans and grants. This is e-technology. And how to get these, especially small providers, up to speed. The state has to, somebody has to decide what language you're all going to use. Communicate with, and I don't know how you move forward until there's some agreement on what the common language is. Number, last thing in X is then find the money. That'd be the future. And number Y is there's actually a bill that has some language of this, one of my bills. Using challenge grants to provide small system improvements, better outcomes, and then greater use of the EBMs,
especially where they're underused. And that's supposed to provide savings. You take the savings and then you would find a way to capture those and to do more of it. Number Z, like I ran out of letters, I guess. And that's where you let the doctor know that they have a top 10 or top 5% costing patient. I have no idea who I'm seeing. They walk in the door, they say they've never had any care, and maybe you've had, I'm the third one they've seen in a month. That makes me a different kind of clinician if I know that they're shopping and they're not complying to anybody. Than if, and they would have, they could opt in, so the people that are, but it would certainly make a difference how you treated a person who's just been, you're the fourth doctor in a month. It's just, it would be way different. You would recommend far different testing. You'd say, well, why don't you go back to your last guy? Maybe they could help you. And, oh, I should? Yeah. And then you lose the business, but then they're better cared for. And it's not the kind of business you want anyway, because they're going to be there for two visits and put you and go to the next one. And there's no benefit how they do that here. And it all meets the standards, and no doctor runs his amount over, because they're all low utilization per doctor. And no one even knows it. Just a thought. Okay. Anything about number three? Moving along here.
Change incentives. If we can talk about number A, has to do with if we can allow incentives for people that do good habits and low use of care. Shifting co-pays. Actually put people to understand that things cost money when they go in. Higher co-pays for ERs and special tests. Maybe a higher co-pay for the top 10% of the providers. Maybe give them a discount if they go to the bottom 80% providers. Some way to give them care, it's not just sticks. One of the articles I passed out talked about when they lowered the co-pays for very expensive drugs that people needed to stay healthy. Actually, they had less incidence of asthma, hospital episodes. They actually saved money. So sometimes spending more money in the front end saves money in the long end. And that's what you're doing. Okay. Thank you, brother. I'll keep going then. And then number D.
Show me the numbers, Mr. Chair.
Fair enough. We're going to study it. And some things I wish I could do, but I can't mandate these. But I hope by putting these ideas out there, people will say, maybe Blue Cross will do an innovative idea, or Health Partners, or Medical will say, we're going to work on that and have a demonstration to see. Number D is just a bunch of wellness ideas. Maybe they'll catch on with it. One of the articles they talked about a well woman program somewhere, and I added well man, well child, and it's kind of got a ring to it. Being well. You know, instead of having sick insurance, the people either have like actual health efforts that would people would catch on to. But I think you want to be more and more creative than just doing the standard fare. And I think there's some very creative ideas in the world that are evidence-based. Some aren't evidence-based, but they've been around a while. And they're really good ideas, and you could call those emerging. And some are from countries that have very good longevity, but there's no evidence except that people live a real long time. And you might list some of those under different categories. People might actually try some of these non-harmful but possibly good ideas. At the worst, they'll just eat more greens, which wouldn't be a bad idea.
Excuse me, on that one, it would probably be good before we go too far in reinventing to inventory. Most of the good health plans already have some of these kind of programs, and we could get an idea from them how they work. But I think a large part of the population of Minnesota already, through their employer or through their health plan, a lot of this wellness built in.
And part of the idea is in this health issue, some people think that they should sit in a chair and have us administer health care to them, and they'll be healthier. And there's a number of people who think that's what I'm going against there. So it's, and maybe they're happy to be able to.
My favorite, Mr. Chair, is and I don't see much TV, but I caught it the other night because my wife was laughing so hard I couldn't figure it out, so I ran to the kitchen. There's this big guy getting on the scale, putting on his outfit, and then running around with the exercise equipment, coming back, getting back on the scale again, and hitting the thing because it was the same weight.
Exactly. Well, very good. And I think that the Department of Health is already working on number E. I just wanted to emphasize that that's something we should keep on doing. And in association with some of the ideas we talked about already. And F is similar. I don't know who should do it, if them or somebody else. But there's a lot of people a lot of providers would be willing to go to their towns and do this for free. I'm not sure if that's been penetrated as well as it might be. We have a lot of talents across the state. And they would love to reach out, and if one doc went one day every 6 months,
to a high school or grade school and talk about the importance of carrots or something, and
whatever, you'd be surprised how those community icons might have an influence on the focus.
And didn't see anything. And let's see, moving along here.
Oh, number eight. I think we're going to get to some pre-authorization stuff sooner or later, but when you create a bar on some of these paperwork requirements, you get less of them. The tax you don't want to do, you give credits for what you want to get more of. The more you pre-authorize, the more you drive people away from them. It's just more bother and it's a barrier. And if you want to have people get more preventative care, more conservative care, more maintenance visits, then you should make those easy to get. And you should make the bar higher for a doctor to request various things that would be done besides that. Because you want less of those because they might not be necessary or you have other side effects that may come. That's the thought there. And number I is a summary of what we've been talking about, getting citizens to think about prevention as opposed to crisis. Let me tell you my little anecdote, which I love telling. I was having a breakfast with somebody you know. And we were at this buffet, and this fellow was as rich as I could imagine by being, and well-educated, 50-something, well-dressed, working on a project that's been in front of us here. I won't tell you any more about that. But so we're at this buffet, and his plate is loaded with sausage and eggs and bacon and a sweet roll. And someone said, "How's your cholesterol doing?" He says, "Oh, it's fine. I'm on Lipitor." Like, you know. That's the icon of how foolish we are, and you wonder why we do so badly because we're on this. Never mind your liver will, you know, rot out after a while, and you know it's just remarkable. That guy's just waiting to incur some costs.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is kind of a pet that I have, and that's D, and it's, you know, the well woman, the well man. And those of us who are on the state policy not allowing us to go to a gym and have it reimbursed or partially reimbursed. And I've said this before for several years, we should be the ones setting the example. Everywhere I go, I see signs about Blue Cross is now paying 2/3 of your...
Blue Cross is smiling out there.
Well, they are, and they're doing a good job, but yet we as Minnesota State employees don't have that benefit, even though we have Blue Cross and Blue Shield.
There's a free stairmaster out in the hallway.
Well, but...
91 steps.
That's true, but I don't live here year-round.
I just didn't stay away.
But also, there's documented information out there that exercise is as good as tamoxifen, and even if you have that diagnosis, they will not do that. So I think it beholds us, if we're going to suggest things, that we start with the state policies, and that's my pet, and I'm saying it.
Okay, we need to keep going. We're doing good here, though. Universal participation in the healthcare system. I won't overburden the point. I do want to point out we do have universal care now. And everybody can go somewhere. Only the place only some people can go is the ER at the end of their crisis time. And it's either somehow they manage to get on a state plan or it comes out of property taxes, which is not the finest way to design a system. I'm not suggesting you do universal care. I just think of all those expensive proposals, including one press conference I had today where we talked about that. I think the more of this that we can do, as I've outlined, and ideas will come out of here, we'll reduce the need to even have to talk about people, you know, that there'll be enough strength in the private market that there'll be enough affordable options, that there'll be less people winding up in ERs for bad reasons and throwing on the backs of property taxpayers. One of those ideas is not a new one, but it's new to the state to be involved in it. There was a big discussion about different prices charged to cash patients or not. As I understand it, a provider is forbidden to give a discount to a cash person simply because they're cash, unless they can show that there's some inherent savings that the person is cash. In this case, there might not be any billing to be done or the likes of that.
But they can't give a cash person the same price as an insurance person just off the top, otherwise they'd be
considered fraud.
That's what I've been told anyway.
And so to help out with that, I was told that any number of people would come after me if I did that,
including various state people as well as the feds. So,
but when you're in a group, if you're part of a negotiated group that you've
entered into a contract with the provider, then you can give them a discount,
as in a Blue Cross plan or as in one of those little cards. I was suggesting the state create a card, and for $25 a year paid to Commerce or somebody, and they get up to 25% discounts for the same day payment on services and whatever you give them on medications, maybe 10%.
The provider wouldn't bill. People pay, you maybe give them a receipt and a diagnosis, and
they'd be on their way. This would be more than a lot of providers get currently under a lot of the plans,
or at least it would approximate that.
This way everybody has 25% coverage, and it gives a way to make
People who are totally cash at least have something.
And $25 a year would be a good value
for people. There's some plans in the market now that are $10 a month.
But there is, and the people, this would be totally voluntary. A provider would say, I'm participating or not. I give 5%, 10%, 20%, 25% discount. Just one idea. It would be almost free, but it would give people
some relief in the cash world. At least they have some benefit.
That's that idea. I think we should think about number B is about pushing community care centers, especially like the CLUS clinics and ones like that, that are in, especially in health disparity areas where there's maybe very low insurance. You might just even
fund those, or
some group would find a way to get grants out of the healthcare access fund, or give them enhanced rates, or just
help them to reach out better.
If indeed we're having people go to the ER for bad reasons,
the same people living not even that too far from these clinics would like to
go there on a free or sliding fee, then they might get some benefit.
And if they had
some insurance,
so much the better.
But it seems like there's somewhere to go with that, especially with what we were told that and maybe the plans or the hospitals would even want to chip in too, because they have to staff up their ERs
to handle these people coming, but they wouldn't even have to go there if they could.
Nip it in the bud. So the system would save money, and somewhere it seems like
we could carve up some money to promote that, and I think that there's
somewhere to go with that. And then number C is kind of a parallel to that, and I don't know how you would do that, but if
you try to reach out to the people who have disparities,
who wind up costing
us a lot of money in the system, and
whether it be
uninsured care or charity care,
if there's some way to get some enhanced reimbursements
to them, I'm not sure that's part of the public sector plans or private ones, but
it's just a thought. And then number D is just MSHA.
That's the value.
Mr.
Yeah.
Just back on B for a sec.
Yeah.
We have some clinics already doing some of this work.
Yeah.
And just as a comment, one way to to at least move in that direction is to make sure we get them some of the reimbursement money that they've not had for a while and been delayed in getting. And I don't know, I'm sure everybody here is aware of the issue, but just to keep raising the issue so that we get that accomplished, that's my only point on that.
Yeah. And I didn't put that in here except for this because that's not our turf, but I think in the private,
I think in the other community, that's something I'd like to work with.
Because some of these folks wind up being very high-cost individuals.
And not to minimize the
what happens to the person who's a high-cost individual, because they have sick and they're in pain and they die young and they have a lot of morbidities and their life is not very good.
Well, actually, not to mention the money, they'll actually have a better life, they'll be productive, we need good workers. You know?
I think that's great.
Anyway, and then the number E, there's a, I don't know, I thought we could look into the cultural variations and people who assess benefits, access benefits that are they already covered, they don't even know the goal. This would be people in the private sector in particular, because we're not doing public sector today. Let's move into admin here.
Our time is holding up pretty well.
I coined the term cost friction. And there's a lot of things that we're asked to do
as providers
that don't change my behavior one little bit.
If I'm in a I'm a good provider, and so almost everything I ask for gets approved. I still have to ask for it. We have to copy our own forms. I've got staff fill them out and fax them in and track them. And if we were
late, we have to send a letter and
for nothing. For almost nothing.
And the company has to incur charges to watch me get approved. And so that's why I was suggesting earlier you might want to find some way to push the review efforts on the top 20%. I'll leave the bottom 80 alone. Just leave them half alone. If they get in the top 20, then you would watch them and put them on a watch list or something and tell them to behave. That's what that all says there. So if we move up to the letters. There was a talk from the hospitals and other people about moving to a statewide uniform claim reporting system, maybe modeling Medicare, since that's what the world is moving toward anyway. And a statewide uniform EOB form, that might be popular. There's a problem with verification coverage. And I said study because I couldn't make the plans do it. But it's really a problem, especially in a small clinic. You spend a fair amount of time on the phone talking to people who don't know the answer, especially in the self-insured plans, because there's everything from soup to nuts on those. The copay is very widely. Their provider list is not consistent. And there's no way to know if they're covered. And there's a lot of surprises from both the provider and the person at the desk. It's a cost driver because the people at the clinic spend a lot of time out of the goodness of their heart verifying, or the person just doesn't go, or they go to the wrong place. And someone's paying the price of not getting the coverage. And so part of my suggestion was if there was a way to have some vestibule tool in their computer that they, just the outside part of the computer system, they could go and verify that they're at least a living person in their plan and some information that could be given. The next one has to do with, again, the clinic nuisances and require or allow that that the primary insurer would pay the minor co-insurance parts that are being paid by a secondary insurer. Settle up every so often. Very often, if you have two insurance companies, you don't have to have a provider bill them. You could bill them both yourself, and you wouldn't have to tell them that you got coverage. So you could double bill. The person might have 280% coverage plan, they get 160% of the coverage. And you'd never know. This would avoid that. And also let the plans know that there's a lot of secondary coverage going around. The employers would know more. They could even negotiate. They might not allow it. They might allow it. They might realize they're offering too much coverage, et cetera. But sometimes we do billing for like $4 on a secondary plan. And it's just doesn't make any sense. In the same vein, number D, where I propose they don't require pre-authorization for under $10 of a service. Some plans, there might be a $20 copay. The covered service is $26. Or $21.78 in certain cases. And you have to do all this paperwork to get the dollar. The person pays $20. And you have to do a fair amount of paperwork to get the $1.78. And there's a reviewing person who has to review the paperwork to see if it's worth paying the $1.78. And so somebody spent $20 looking at that $1.78. And so it doesn't make any sense. And this is a cost friction. This is raising costs to both the insurance company and the provider. To absolutely no end. So that's my. I think there's somewhere to go with that, and we can work it out friendly with the plan. And maybe it'd be for those people in the bottom 80% or something, you know. But I don't even know what they pay a reviewer on these claims. It's got to be a few bucks or $5 or $8 for the claim. And it's money that comes out of the insurance company. And it's come out of the employer's pocket. There was some talk about companies have to have reserves holding. They have to reserve for 100 years or something about future claims. I don't know if that's true, or is that just totally, that's nothing? How long do they have to hold? That's nothing anymore? Is that a little more? Yeah. But the point is that was barring people. Okay, never mind. Yeah, I'm open to advice. I'm just glad to be liberal what I put in. Moving HMOs to commerce. There's a radical idea. And then number G has to do with a debit card direct from the insurance company to you, which would avoid, once their case is established, it's just an idea, but it would avoid a whole lot of billing, especially if you're going to pay anyway on these small numbers. And you could still do retrospective review by providers who were on the up and up. But it would reduce a ton of paperwork. And then I gave Commerce some jobs here, and maybe he helps to do them or somebody else, but there's a lot of clinic efficiency work going on these days. If somebody would provide online ideas and free seminars to reduce waste and to get rid, we had a fellow come talk about waste and things. And the kind of savings we found in the clinics on helping people be efficient. And even in the big hospitals. I've had two different groups come in to me talking personally about how they work with hospitals, saving a ton of money by just getting rid of what they call muda, which is Japanese for waste, I guess. So a no muda. And it's amazing how you move. Just the systems have been there so long; they don't even people don't even see the efficiencies anymore. You get fresh eyes who know what they're doing, and these folks who are vendors would be happy to come in and give free seminars, and the people would go in. What they would go home with a lot of good ideas for free, and they could follow up or not, and you could open up to anybody who wanted to do it. But it just I think it's straightened the friction. It's a cost friction. And another friction is this lack of electronic billing. Many small clinics like mine have a hard time figuring it out. And if we had a little help, we could do it. Another friction site is that. This is your favorite group again, that's in Valley, the Health Utility Commission. We would, that'd be the Health Records Commission. As we move into e-records, somebody should help this to be facilitated. If it's an existing department or some subset of a department that would provide services to get people up to online. The future is that way, like it or not. If you had a Department of Commerce, which would be this or somebody else, that would charge fees for the actual cost. I'm told this would be kind of revolutionary. It would get us ahead of the pack. And they would charge back to the users the fees, and it would be free except for startup costs. So just for fun. The idea was to have a ERISA plan state this, but since we can't make ERISA people do anything, you'd have the card say this is not an ERISA plan. That way, if they didn't have it, you'd know it's an ERISA plan. It would help, at least if you don't have the computer access, that the providers would know that you're dealing with an ERISA product. And either beware, or you know, you better check on more things you would check on than standard of food cost. Yeah, that's another.
Chair, I just wondered if you would provide legislators with a little note card of what ERISA stands for, so when my 84-year-old mother calls me and says, what in the world does this mean? What? I am curious, though. What's the point? But, so what if you're not a ERISA plan? What's the point of having that on there?
Yeah, the coverages are all different. If you have for one thing, it's managed by any number of groups. The three big HMOs, you kind of got those figured out. You have a website and you can go online. You may have these are the self-insureds. They're managed by any number of people. They may not have 24-hour access to their information about eligibility and what's covered. They may not have a phone that's available to check what's covered. At our point, if we tell people what they can expect, they have covered or not. So we just don't have, there's no surprises. In many cases, we can go online. And that's the trouble with it.
Well, let me make sure I've understood.
It's not meant to be a discriminatory. It just lets us know. They just know what they're
dealing. Maybe I'm thinking in reverse, because to me, non-ERISA means a self-insured plan.
No, well, non-ERISA would be a not
self-insured. Sorry, fully insured plan. Fully right. Insured plan.
Well, it's whatever the self-employed coverage is made up to be. Because they're under the federal. There's no mandates. There's no. That's the federal.
The ERISA plans ERISA are federal. Under federal, right. We have no control.
You can't make ERISA plans put on their card. This is an ERISA plan.
Right, right.
But so I just thought, well, if we can't do that, then we just have Blue Cross put on theirs. This is an non-ERISA plan. Because Blue Cross manages the ERISA plan.
I guess what I'm struggling a little bit is that's a piece of information, but to a consumer, I don't know if that.
No, it's for the means provider.
To the provider.
It's for the provider. So when they check in, they'll know that they had better check the website. I can't tell how many different plans we're running into now with the more, with me and HSM, and we can't keep track of them. And so, we don't know if tell people they have a $2,000 deductible, they have a $5 copay. We don't know, it's the same company. I mean, the same little card looks like. And, without calling or finding out, you just don't know. And the people deserve to know. You know, we try to give transparency at our clinic. People have no surprise. They say, well, you got a deductible of $2,000, just so you know. So you're virtually cash, or you have a $10 copay. So that's all. It's a real low level provider issue. Okay, moving on here. oh, this language interpreters is just for your benefit. That would be the study that there's a problem with someone has to bear the cost.
And the plans, I think, Kitty Lee tell me that's included in their fee already. That's all part of the nuts and bolts of providing services. I can tell you it's a very expensive cost if you have to incur it. And
so it needs to be worked out in the system.
I don't care what the final disposition is, but it needs to be addressed.
That's that. I think we're almost out of solid ideas here. Let me just whip through the last couple, and then we'll go back to discussion. We've got a little time left. We can read number 7, state leadership. I've got a couple caveats I put there. Just to be careful what you ask for, you might get it. Number 8, the buyer's alliance stuff. I just put a little few thoughts there you can read. Public-private partnership. There are a few ideas there on the last page. I held in my hand the last page. And I think what you want to remember, just to reemphasize, I hope you've seen in here, there's actually some big ideas coming yet, but we don't want to kill the innovation that we've seen. And if we got over our reach, we could actually cause harm, and I'm not interested in doing that. Here's another group that we're going to create, Representative Bradley. Here's some ideas that would involve the public and the privates kind of working together. Creation of some kind of a reinsurance group, which I would suggest would be privately run, state-owned. Stop-loss provider to assure guaranteed issue all risk coverage. It might actually replace MSHA someday, I would think. And it would be available for self-insured employers if they had agreed to be under Minnesota's standards. It would be voluntary. I have no idea what kind of money it takes to set up such a pool. We heard nothing but testimony in our other committee about malpractice, for instance, the rates being influenced by Google and Andrew, stock market losses, etc. If this was a Minnesota group, you'd be surprised how we could actually even serve some of those needs out of here. I got an email from the ER docs that said, don't worry, we've gone offshore. Oh, great, you know.
And so we're no longer even giving jobs to the state, to the country's insurance companies because they've gone offshore. Is that a good thing? I don't know. But if you're trying to contain costs, some of those little co-ops, some of the schools that want to pool together, some of the small employers, did I say that again?
I didn't say that.
Would find us to be, I think, a godsend. They could plug into this thing, and we would establish how they would access it. I think we'd make money. And we wouldn't keep the money, we'd just keep turning it back in terms of lower premiums.
It needs some work, but I think this, I really like that idea. Of all the ideas, I think that one excites me the most.
The next one has to, this is a Knobloch bill, number B, allowing employers to buy into cooperative pools. I kind of enhanced it a little bit. I think that some of these co-ops have really got it figured out on a small scale, and then with them a little bigger scale. And with the pooling becomes an issue, but they'd have to buy their way into a pool if they have bad experience. They have to agree to be in 5 years. They could buy their way out. But they would have to, it would be a 5-year leaving process. They couldn't just jump around willy-nilly. You see co-ops becoming more and more competitive. And I think it would be kind of interesting. And the last 2 points have to do with e-technology loans, which there's a bill about that. And the last one is, I think you've got companies with private insurance. There's an article about one company in Florida, I won't embarrass anybody, was brought to Florida in a jobs kind of zone, provided no health insurance, and their employees were all on state plans, state subsidized health plans. I think that's the wrong article. So anyway, that's my thoughts to you. If nothing else, please give me your annotated thoughts. We do have time for discussion and questions from me. Yeah, Representative Thiessen.
Thank you. Can you talk a little bit more about A in that last thing you're...
Yeah. That'd be the Thiessen heavy.
So, I'm not sure. You're talking about medical insurance as opposed to malpractice insurance?
I should do both.
Okay. That's all right.
I don't know why not. I mean, you could have different divisions, and you could risk each one differently, I suppose, within your pool.
But it might get us somewhere.
Well, just a comment on that. When we allowed kind of expanded use as a multi-employer welfare association, and allowed them to come together, single farmers, very small businesses. If you do the right things, this can happen in the private marketplace.
Yeah.
Because they found reinsurance. I mean, it's been a struggle, but there are people willing to do it in the private marketplace if we just give them the tools to do it.
Yeah, we need to give them tools. I just put that out there since I'm so frustrated with hearing all these stories about reinsurers leaving the state and being affected so much by just non-related. I mean, Hurricane Hugo is not a help to them.
Well, they're chasing reinsurers across the ocean,
yeah,
to find people that carry it. I mean, that's pretty common.
Yeah, and so I'm just saying, if they can't find one, if we're serious about Minnesota, they have to help the world. Let's help Minnesota. That was my idea. Editorial comments aside. Other comments? Can we go back to that one question here?
Oh, about the, Mr. Chair, about the,
what was it,
the utility thing? No, the public, yeah.
Oh, the comments, the way we go about, does somebody in the audience want to come talk about how we do, how the commissioner reviews rates or HMOs and commerce levels?
Looks like they're
talking. They had their chance, so I'll have to talk to someone. Does someone want to tell us what they would have said? Anyone want to speak for commerce today? Okay.
Well, no, the only thing, I guess the only comment I would make is to thank you for, there's a lot of work went into this, pulling this stuff together, and, you know, I think that there's some of the stuff is, it seems there's maybe beyond the legislature's reach, but I think it's important to get here, but there, I think there's some actually really good ideas, so thank you for doing that.
And so what I'd like you all to do, including those audience members who are, we should write down who's still here and give them extra points. And you're a fellow star by your little form, and I'll look especially, I'm serious, you two cared to stay. Many of you have been here to all these things, and I have to commend you for that. It means a lot. I'm glad you're interested enough to
sit through all this.
Especially Carolyn, it's a good Carolyn. A happy face. Put a happy face on your thing. anyway, but I do want to know what you think. And there's extra copies or an extra one. If you can get them to me by tomorrow, we'll have a meeting soon. And if you need to do talk to your people and get back later, but I need some feedback. So I need to know what to tell them. I know what to tell a staff what not to work on. Because they need the language for all these wonderful ideas if I don't tell them not to. And we may meet, and I don't know our schedule. It might be Friday at 6 in the morning. How is that? You get big happy faces. Well, if nothing else, we'll be here back on Tuesday with some kind of language. At least with a pared-down version that will reflect your stuff. If there's something to do in the meantime, we'll try to make sure you get it on the floor, or it'll watch the listserv. I'm sure you'll get that. Last chance for comments. We've actually contained our time costs as well, so you now are 15 minutes in the bank. Go enjoy the sunshine. We adjourn. Thank you very much.